This is your house. These are your neighbor's houses. How many of these neighbors do you know by name? Go ahead, try to name them. If you're like most people these days, you probably only know a few of your neighbors by name. We have garages for our cars, privacy fences for our backyards, and we seem to be perpetually busy. You're doing pretty well if you wave or say hi as you're passing by. But what if we did more? What if we made it a point to learn the names of the people who live on our block? What if we took the time to listen to our neighbors and find out what makes them tick? What if our neighborhoods relied on each other in times of need, whether it be for a cup of flour or a shoulder to cry on? What if Jesus really meant that we should love our actual neighbors? Imagine the difference you could make in your neighborhood if you got to know your neighbors better. Imagine the difference you could make in your community if you partnered with others who had a desire to become better neighbors. Imagine the difference it could make in our cities if local churches were working together to make this a reality. You don't have to imagine very hard. It's happening. Check out The Art of Neighboring to discover how you can join others around the world to build genuine relationships right outside your door.
Well, good morning. I want to welcome all of you and those who are joining us at our evening service. I want to welcome you and those at Steiner Ranch in Brushy Creek. And for those of you who are guests or visitors, we want to welcome you today. We are in the process of getting to know our neighbors. Jesus made this incredible statement. He said, "The greatest command is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And the second one is like it, love your neighbors as yourself." So how many of you this week made a little bit of progress with somebody, maybe got a first name, said hello, prayed for somebody? Yeah, a bunch of you. That's very exciting. So we're moving forward on this, but we also recognize that there are a lot of things that hold us back. The biggest one is the time barrier. We think, oh man, if I get to know my neighbors, they're going to want so much time. Like you're really that significant? Well, okay. So we talked about that last week. The barrier that I think is actually the biggest we want to talk about this week, which is the fear barrier. Let's face it, the idyllic America from the American Gothic of the past, where everybody's sitting on their front porch together in the neighborhood, drinking fresh squeezed lemonade while the kids play baseball in the front yard, the smell of an apple pie cooling in the windowsill, has been replaced by privacy fences, security company sprinkler systems that go off at 4 o'clock in the morning, and that intimidating no solicitor sign that flashes on everybody's front porch. And so oftentimes just kind of reaching out to the people around us. If you live in a subdivision or out in the country, or if you live in an apartment complex, to kind of walk next door or above or below and knock on the door, that feels scary. Now, some of you guys are extroverts, and that kind of seems stupid to you because, like, why? Everybody's my friend. But for the majority of people, it's a little bit fearful crossing the fear barrier. And there are some reasons why we have fear. In fact, I took some time to kind of think through the different types of fear or reasons. And let me share some of those with you. The first one is fear of danger. We were raised in the stranger danger culture, right? And we've got this 24-hour news cycle where somebody in the world, some crazy person, did something insane. And who knows, maybe the person living across the street is that person. And so we think about that, danger. Second fear is the fear of rejection. I actually think this is the biggest one. What if I reach out to meet my neighbors and they don't like me? What if I go say hi and they don't want to talk to me? And then I have to live next door to these people for the next 10, 20 years and they don't like me. I don't know. Do I really dare go? Do I really dare reach out? Here's one, the fear of messiness. What if I go meet my neighbors and I find out, like, they got a lot of issues? Like, maybe they got marriage issues, or maybe they've got a child that's out of control. Maybe they're depressed, or maybe they're in financial need, and they're going to expect me to fix them. Like, I don't know that I could do that. What if that's really a messy situation? One of the things you might want to take into consideration is oftentimes when we are in a situation where we don't know how to help, if we reach out and pray and ask God to give us insight, we grow as he teaches us how to minister in messy situations. Here's the last one, fear of bad behavior. Like, what if I meet my neighbors and they invite me over to a party and it's one of those kind of parties? Like wild and out of control. What if my next door neighbor has children that have potty mouths and like my kids start bringing home bad words? Like, what if I reach out to my neighbors and they live the kind of lifestyle that's not compatible with my way of life? And I find myself around people of bad behavior. I could put myself in a really awkward position. Now, as scary as all these things may appear and as scary as they may feel, I want us to understand today when we talk about fear that the Bible frequently tells people, do not fear or fear not. Why? Because fear is the opposite of faith. Fear says, because I don't know what's going to happen, the unknown, or I can't control what's going to happen, therefore, I have this feeling in me of awkwardness or dread or worry, and because of that, I don't move into those situations. I shrink back. Faith says that I can trust that whatever the situation is, God is in charge. He goes before me. He has control. He will carry me in there. I can trust him specifically when he commands me to do something. And so when Jesus says the greatest command is to love your neighbor as yourself, like starting with the people that are geographically close, seems like an obvious way to do that, even if there is a sense of fear. Now, let me just suggest to you that fear is not generally a positive thing in your life. Now, if there's real danger, fear causes you to fight or flight. You know, there's something positive about that, keeps you out of trouble. But generally speaking, fear has negative impact on your life. And we want to talk about that today. The first way fear has a negative impact on our lives is it actually distorts reality. It distorts our perception of what's going on around us. Things that we think could happen, or things that we think are happening, or things that we worry about may happen, they actually begin to change the way we see the world around us. Let me give you some examples. Let me take you to one in particular. Remember when the nation of Israel came out of Egypt? Way back in the book of Exodus, God did a powerful thing, brought 10 plagues on Pharaoh. Pharaoh let them go. They get to the Red Sea and they're trapped. God parts the Red Sea. They cross the Red Sea. He feeds them in this arid desert by sending manna, water from the rock. He takes them down to Mount Sinai. He demonstrates his power on Mount Sinai, gives them the law, and then they head up to the promised land. When they get to the edge of the land of Canaan, the land that God told them he was going to give them, after all of these miraculous signs that he did, they decided to try to find out their strategy, so they sent 12 spies into the land to spy out the land. When the spies came back, two of them said, man, this place is awesome. There's some pretty tough people there, but we can take them because we have God with us. 10 of them said, no way, no way. And they spread a report among the people that made everybody fearful. Let me show you that passage in Numbers chapter 13. Here's what the 10 spies said. They said, we can't attack these people. They're stronger than we are. And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they had explored. They said, the land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw are of great size. Big people. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them. I want you to notice what they're saying here. They're saying this. Like when we looked at ourselves in comparison to them, we felt like we were these little bitty grasshoppers that they would just stomp on. And we knew that they felt the same way about us. Here's my question. Do you think that they actually did a legitimate survey of the people in the land to find out what they really thought? Like created a focus group and brought the various peoples together and said, okay, now when you think about us, how big do you think we look? In other words, they didn't do that, right? This is what, in their fear, they projected upon the other people. These people would never be afraid of us. Now, here's why this is important. In the ancient Near East, hand-to-hand combat was often won by a confident army. In other words, the army that thought they could win almost always won, and here's why. Because when you go into battle thinking you're going to get killed, what do? Once the battle's engaged, you run away, meaning your army's smaller, and then as you start to lose, more run away and more run away and more run away. So having confidence in battle is a big part of victory. Here's what they were saying. These people have confidence that they're going to could kill us, so we can't even try this. Now, was that a true perception? Fast forward 40 years. God takes that group of people who failed in faith back into the wilderness. They wander for 40 years, and they all die in the wilderness. Then they come back to the same spot, getting ready to go into the land of Canaan. This time, they only send in two spies. They learn their lesson, right? They send in two spies. The two spies end up in the city of Jericho, in the house of Rahab the harlot, and here's what she says to them about their perception of the Israelites. Watch what she says. She says this, I know that the Lord has given this land to you, and that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. Watch what she says. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea. Now, when did that happen? 40 years earlier. When the first group of spies went into the land, the people were already shaking in their boots because they heard about the miracle of the parting of the Red Sea and other miracles. So the people were actually afraid, but that first group of 10 spies, because of their fear, they perceived wrong. Their idea of reality was changed. She goes on to say, when we heard of it, our hearts melted and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is God in heaven above and on the earth below, and that generation conquered the land. Fear among us distorts our perception of the people who live near us. Now, interestingly enough, a major survey done 40 years ago, 40 plus years ago in 1972, half of Americans said that they trusted their fellow man and half said they didn't. Fast forward, same survey done in 2012, and the numbers changed significantly. A third of the people only trust their fellow man in the U.S., and two-thirds don't. Changed from half to only a third in 40 years. Why don't we trust people anymore? Primarily because we don't know people. We keep to ourselves, and we live with people around us that we don't even know who they are. And so no wonder we don't trust people. The idea of walking up to somebody or going and knocking on a stranger's door may feel like approaching the devil himself.
Jubal!
Stop touching my knocker!
Hi!
Hi! What can I do for you?
I'm here to save you money on power today, sir. Are you interested?
I am not!
I'm Steve.
Turn around and walk away!
We have a deal today.
Remove yourself from my veranda!
Who's in charge of the house?
I'm in charge of the house! Why would you think otherwise?
You're a door knocker.
Walk away! Remove yourself, puny mortal! Away with you and your plastic clipboard! Leave now and forever!
Oh my gosh!
Walk on! Away
with you! Now, I know some of you right now are Googling devil door knocker. You're thinking, how can I get one of those for my house, right? Keep people off my front porch. I think oftentimes our perception is the devil lives next door because fear distorts the way we perceive reality. The second thing that fear does is fear actually stifles the work of God in us. Like, God desires to work in our lives, and he works through acts of obedience and faith, not through fear. Let me show you that in the New Testament. In 2 Timothy chapter 1, Paul writing to Timothy says this, "For God did not give us a spirit of timidity, but a spirit of power and of love and of self-discipline. Whenever I am unwilling to obey the directives of God because I feel like they would be too awkward, it would be too hard, I would be afraid, that's not the Spirit of God speaking into your life." Because when the Spirit of God is speaking into your life, what does he do? You have power. You realize that God goes with me and he's powerful working in me. You have love. The motive of your heart for reaching out is genuine concern for the people around you. And you have self-discipline. You can actually say to your feet, walk. You can actually say to your hands, knock. You can actually say to your mouth, speak. That's what the Spirit of God empowers you to do. And the person who wrote this to Timothy knew it firsthand because he experienced fear as well. When Paul was in Corinth, he became fearful. And watch what happens. In Acts chapter 18, one night the Lord spoke to Paul in a vision. Do not be afraid. Now, generally you don't tell people not to be afraid unless they're afraid, right? Do not be afraid. Keep on speaking. Do not be silent, for I am with you. That is the promise of God, that when we obey him and go in his name, God is always with us. I am with you, and no one is going to attack and harm you because I have many people in this city. How many people does God have in our city, in our neighborhood, that he's got his eye on, that he's reaching out to, and he wants to demonstrate his love through us to them? If you want to see the power of God at work in you, we set aside fear and we go in faith, obey in faith. Well, you say, Tim, I've got a worst case scenario. Let me trump you. I got a letter or an email this week from a guy in our church, and he laid out what could be the worst case scenario. He talks about couple started building a house on the property next to him. It took forever to build the house. He was so excited to meet them because he wanted to be a good neighbor. He went over to their house, met them, tried to start building a relationship. But before the project was finished, they started a property dispute against him, which cost him lawyers and money to resolve a property dispute. Not long after that, he started a remodeling project on his house. And in the course of that remodeling project, the people went to the city complaining and came back with all kinds of delays, all kinds of extra permitting, extra inspections, even though he followed everything perfectly and didn't do anything wrong, again, costing him a lot of money and a terrible relationship with his neighbors. And so, here's what he says to me. He says, here's my loopholes, my neighboring loopholes. Number one, I tried already, and they don't get along with anybody on the street. Number two, they don't participate in the neighborhood. They don't come to anything we do in the neighborhood, and the other neighbors consider them unneighborly. Number three, the last time I proactively invited them into my home, they took advantage of us. Right at the time he was starting to remodel, he invited them over to show them what he was planning to do. Guess what they did? They took notes so that they could use those specifics to try to go to the city and undermine everything he was doing. My loopholes certainly justify my lack of neighborliness, doesn't it? Here's what he writes. I don't think so. He said, for the last 8 days, I've been working from home, looking into their front yard and hoping for an opportunity to approach them. Today, God created that opportunity. I saw them in their garage, so I called out and asked if I could come talk to them. And to paraphrase this conversation, here's how it went. He walked over and he said to them, my church is doing a study on neighboring, and I'm in a small group. And one of the challenges that we've had is, what's our relationship with our neighbors? And I know ours has not been good. Let me apologize to you for anything I have done to create a rift between us. I want you to know that I am sorry, that I'll do whatever it takes to repair this relationship. I want to have a good relationship with you, and I'll work at it. Just tell me, are you open to this? He said, now you don't have to tell me now. You can think about it, but I just want to open this conversation. And the husband says to him, we don't even have to think about it. To which he noticed the wife with a real sour look on her face. He said, we want to put the past behind us as well. She begins to smile. He says, we apologize for our part in this, and we realize you and your wife and your family, you are wonderful people. The hardships that we caused you when we were building our house were way harder than what happened with you. And now that this is done, I want us to have a good relationship. We apologize. We want to move forward together. Totally unexpected response. And so, rather than leaving it there, he says, you know, one of the things we've been asked to do in our small group is come up with 3 things that we know about our neighbors, and we realize in all this time we've lived next to each other, we don't know anything about you. Would you be willing to come to our house, sit on the back porch, watch the sunset over a bottle of wine, and us get to know you? And the man and his wife said, we think that that would be delightful. How does that happen? How does that happen? He puts aside fear, goes in the confidence that God is with him, and has a breakthrough that nobody would have ever expected. We do not want the power of God in us to be stifled because we're afraid. Step out there. God can do amazing things, and he wants to use you in amazing ways. The third thing that fear does to us is this. Fear blinds us to God's heart for the people that he puts around us. Fear blinds us to God's actual heart for the people he puts around us. 2 times in Scripture, Jesus has these incredible encounters with people, and he's criticized for these encounters. One of those takes place in Luke chapter 7, and if you want to turn there and just take a look at it, I want you to show you this encounter. In Luke chapter 7, starting in verse 36, Jesus gets invited to a party at a religious man's house. Now, these kinds of parties would have taken place in a courtyard that would have been open to the street, and so Jesus is there reclining at the table with this guy talking, and other guests are there, and all of a sudden, a woman comes walking up from the street, and here's how it is described. In verse 37, when a woman who had lived a sinful life in that town learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, she brought an alabaster jar of perfume. And as she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. Now, that is a little bit awkward for those of you who like your personal space. Think about it this way. Think if your pastor was at a party that you were at, and a well-known person from one of the cabarets in town, dressed like she came from work, showed up, took my shoes off, and began to mess with my feet, with her face and her hair, kissing, pouring perfume on them. Would that be distracting? Would you be thinking to yourself, does he know her? Like, how does he know her? Like, what is their relationship? Like, what is going on? Like, what is she doing? And here's what the text says. Verse 39, when the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she is a sinner. Like, I know her. I know what she is. She is sin incarnate. Now, Jesus starts talking to him and tells him a parable about love and forgiveness. And in verse 44, it says, then he turned toward the woman and said to Simon, do you see this woman? Great question. Like, do I see this woman? That's all I can see. That's all anything anybody can see. We're all looking at this woman. But that's not the question Jesus is asking. You see, in his mind, Simon's mind, he's already put her in her category. Her identity is defined by her past behavior, and she is now in a category that she will never break out of. She will always and forever be treated as a sinner. Religious people stay away from people like her. She's bad. She's bad. That's what he sees. He doesn't see a person. He doesn't see hope. He sees a reputation, and he says, stay away, stay away. That's what he sees when he sees her. Jesus sees something entirely different. Look at what he says. He says, I came to your house. You didn't give me any water for my feet. Customary greeting to wash your feet. But she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. To kneel at someone's feet, crying and weeping, realizing that you were actually washing the dust off his feet and then used your hair as a towel, that is a sign of repentance and brokenness. That's what Jesus sees when he looks at her. He says, you did not give me a kiss, customary greeting to kiss on the cheek. But this woman, from the time I entered, has not stopped kissing my feet. When would you kiss somebody's feet? You'd only kiss somebody's feet when you were humble and grateful. So not only is she broken and repentant, but she's humble. She's grateful to Jesus for what he was doing to help her. And then he says, you did not put oil on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. Expensive perfume? That's an act of worship. Therefore, I tell you, her sins, her many sins, have been forgiven. For she loved much, but he who has been forgiven little loves little. And Jesus raises the question, this woman, do you see her? Do you see her? The people that God has placed around you, do you actually see them, people who are loved by God and capable of being forgiven and redeemed and invited into his family? Do you see people like that? Or do you see, oh yeah, that's the guy who doesn't keep his lawn mowed. Or that's the guy whose teenager parks in front of my house and leaks oil on the street in front of my house. Or those are the people who live in the apartment above me that play their music too loud and argue with each other. Do you see people? Or do you see the nuisances of those who are living all around us? I had a really, really sad event happen in our neighborhood recently. One of our neighbors that nobody really knows sent out to the email list and basically was asking for a mobile vet. And so Cindy responded back and said, we don't know what a mobile vet is, but if you need me to take your cat to the vet, I'd be happy to do that if you need some help. So she emails her back, and the woman emails back to Cindy. She says, well, thank you for that, but my husband, who recently divorced me, has agreed to keep the cat for a while because I have a lot of medical problems. And Cindy emails her back and says, well, listen, like, I go to the store a lot. I mean, look at my husband. You can tell that I go to the store a lot. And if you just need me to pick up some things for you, just send me a list. I'd be happy to pick them up for you. And she says, well, right now, I'm actually getting ready to go to the hospital. She says, I've got so much pain, I'm going to go check in to the ER. I'm going to go to the ER. And Cindy offered to take her. She said, no, I've got that covered. So she goes to the ER. And so Cindy sends her a note. How are you doing? Kind of checking up on her. And again, this is a person that doesn't come out. Nobody even in our neighborhood knows each other, and everybody in our neighborhood knows a lot about each other. But she's husband's divorced her, can't take care of her cat. She's going to the ER. And she responded to Cindy's email with this. She says, I think between you and the ER staff combined, I have truly felt cared for and comforted by all of you in more ways than I could ever express. Thank you for reminding me that no matter what is happening, there is no need to ever feel alone. Thank you. How do you become so alone that a neighbor that you've never had a conversation with but only read a concerned email? And I know some of you guys are working in the ER department, and you guys are really wonderful people. But let me tell you, if I'm looking for friends, I'm not going to slash my arm and come to the ER to find friends. But the only place that she has human touch in her life that makes her not feel alone is a stranger that's emailing her and the people that professionally have touched her and cared for her in the ER. And that is so sad to me. How can people be that alone? And yet there are many people all over the city of Austin. Some of them live in our neighborhoods and they don't have anybody. And the question is, do we see people? Do we see these people? Do we see these people? In another situation, Jesus leads a tax collector to faith. His name is Matthew invites him over to this house, and everybody that shows up are like tax collectors and sinners because Matthew doesn't have anybody to party with except for the bad people like him. And Jesus shows up at the party, and the religious crowd criticizes him. What are you doing with these people? What are you doing with these people? And Jesus responds back, says, listen, I didn't come to call the righteous. I came to call sinners to repent. I'm here for the purpose of redemptive activity. Friday morning, one of our elders told us he's leaving work and he's in a hurry because he's trying to get to small group. And as he's driving to small group, he gets a text, stops and looks at the text. It's from his neighbor who says to him, hey, we're going to be out on the driveway tonight. You want to stop by and visit us? He starts typing back to him, I can't visit with you tonight because I'm going to small group with my church. Subset, to learn about how to love you as my neighbor. He actually didn't get that far. Halfway through the text, it's like the Holy Spirit saying, no, wait, are you going to go study about it or are you going to go do it? He erased the text and sent him another text and said, I'll be right over. But wouldn't that be like Christians, that we're going to go study how to obey but not actually obey? And Jesus said, who are you with? Who are you spending time with? Only the people in the holy huddle? Are you spending time with the people who need us? The people who need us. Let me share one more story with you about how God works. So yesterday morning, I had the privilege of going to the groundbreaking ceremony for Greater Mount Zion Church. They're building a new church building, and Pastor Galen invited me to come and address the group, so I was able to come. And so after it was over, one of my good friends, Dan Davis, who's kind of one of the pastors, church planners in the city who helped us start our strategic council, he and I are walking away, and we're talking. He says, Tim, let me tell you what happened with my neighbor. I said, okay, Dan. He said, listen. He said, I just moved into a new place. He's an old guy. And he said, I moved into a new place, and it's got like this zero property or whatever you call it. He said, but we've got a little area with some green stuff in it, and the gardener that was supposed to take care of it didn't do a good job. So I was out a couple weeks ago, and I'm working out there, and my neighbor comes out, and she and I are commiserating about how poor the gardener did in our little area here. And we got to talking, and I asked her what her spiritual background was, and she said, well, I don't really have any, but now I'm a Buddhist. And he talked to her for a while, and then that Sunday, so a couple weeks ago, that Sunday he was asked to speak on neighboring at the church that he's part of. So he stands up and he talks about, I got to meet my neighbor, I'm so excited. He names her by first name and then prays this beautiful prayer over her that Jesus would bless her that week. Monday morning he runs into her in the yard again and he tells her, hey, I was at church on Sunday, and I prayed this prayer for you in church. And she says, you did what? And he said, I prayed a prayer of blessing over you that Jesus would bless you. She said, that's weird. Like, why would you do that? I don't understand. He said, well, I just wanted to pray for you. She said, okay, I guess. So the next week, he's talking to her, and he says, well, how'd your week go last week? And she said, what are you talking about? He said, you remember I said I prayed for you on Sunday last week that you'd have a great week? And she said, oh, wow. She said, this has been one of the best weeks of my life. Like, things went really well at work. I got assigned to a project that I'd always wanted, and she outlined some relational things and things that had happened that were really good. And she said, wow, like, I guess your prayers were answered. And he said, can I pray for you right now? She said, well, I guess so. He put his hand on her shoulder, and he prayed that Jesus would bless her and show her his love. And when he finished his prayer, he looked up, and she had tears running down her cheeks, and she gave him this big hug. And she said to him, Dan, I didn't know that Jesus was so good. I didn't know that Jesus was so good. When Jesus tells us, love your neighbor as yourself, what he's saying to us is, let the people around you feel the goodness of Jesus. And do not let fear hold you back. Let's bow our heads for prayer. With your heads bowed, I just want you to think about a couple things before the Lord. For some of you, fear may be a constant companion. It may be someone that you've battled your whole life. And today, I just encourage you, take your fear to Jesus. Ask him to give you the strength and the courage to trust him. Some of you have a person in mind right now that is clearly the neighbor that you would never, ever feel comfortable reaching out to. Today, may you have the courage to pray that God would open up a door for you. Maybe some of you here today would say, there's never been a time when I've experienced the goodness of Jesus, the love of Jesus. Today's a great day to put your hope and your trust in him. Whatever your situation is today, God's wanting to speak to you. So, Lord Jesus, we thank you for each person that's here. You have a plan and a next step for them. You want to work good in their life. So, Father, we pray that as we go on this journey together, that you would reveal yourself to us, that we would experience your love and share that along the way.